Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, July 13th, 1998. In the Creekside room this evening is Anna Maria Pineda. Session number 98-1 and is titled Hospitality and the Celebration of Posadas. Let's listen in.
This evening's session, and we're around this lovely fireplace. And let me introduce myself. My name is Anna Maria Pineda. A little bit about myself. I'm actually originally from Central America. I was born in El Salvador. And at the age of two, my parents came up to San Francisco, California, and resided in, or established themselves in a wonderful neighborhood called the Mission. And it's called the Mission because there is an original mission of the Franciscans there, Mission Dolores. Except that I didn't realize until much later on, I think I must have been in my teens, when I figured out that that's why it was called the Mission. But it's home, and it has been home. And in that particular neighborhood, so many of the Latin American countries are represented. And the chapter that I contributed to in the book, Practicing Our Faith, is really inspired by my experience growing up in the Mission and being there for the celebration of Las Posadas. I'm going to address Las Posadas, but not until the very end. I want to start out thinking more specifically about hospitality and maybe inviting all of us just to take a few moments and think about when we might find ourselves in need of hospitality. Moments when perhaps we feel, as a stranger, we feel ourselves a bit alone or in a different setting or in need. Moments when hospitality would have been such a wonderful blessing and perhaps we haven't had it. Perhaps there's been a fear about even asking for hospitality or giving hospitality to others in need. So if we could just take a few moments just to kind of situate ourselves and think of putting ourselves back into that moment. I am sure that we all have stories that we could tell about our own need for hospitality or moments when we ourselves have given hospitality to others. And let me just start out by telling you a few stories, and I at different moments opened it up for your sharing as well, so please feel free to do so. I think my earliest recollection of hospitality may have been when I was 4 or 5. My parents came up from Central America. They came up not knowing the language and actually only knowing the place of one friend who happened to have moved from the others that they had. So their coming into a new setting was very challenging, was very different, and so forth. But I remember us moving into a neighborhood, the name California Street kind of stands out in my memory. And we lived in an apartment building. And one night around maybe 10 o'clock or so, I was already tucked away in bed. And I heard someone at the door of the apartment, and someone must have come in because my father went out to the door and let this person in, and there was some conversation, some exchange. But I really didn't know what had happened. And the next morning, when I woke up and got up, I noticed that the couch had a blanket and sheets and pillows on it. But there in the living room was a young Chinese teenager, a young lady, Chinese, whose father owned the laundry down the block. And I heard my father and mother have this conversation, and my father was saying to my mother, you know, I want to take her back to her father's place, but I don't think I should go alone because I want to make sure that the father knows that she has been with us overnight. And apparently what had happened was that she was under very strict regulations about curfew time coming home, and she had passed it, way past it. And when she went home, her father closed the door in her face and said, you cannot come in, and left her out in the street. And she knew my parents because we used to go to the laundry, and so she felt that she could come to our house and ask for posada, for shelter. And my father said, absolutely, you are not staying outdoors, you're coming and spending the night. But he wanted to make sure that the father would know that she had been safe and that no harm had come to her, and that she had not committed anything that would have been contrary to the honor of the house. So that memory has always stayed with me, but I think because my parents had had the experience of being immigrants, of coming to a country that was unfamiliar, they were always very prone to give hospitality to others because they knew what it meant to need hospitality. Then there's another story that hits much later when I was working in a parish, and it happened to be my own parish in San Francisco, the mission. And I had been working with families, and there was a woman who had left her country of Mexico to come up to the States. And she was a single mother, had four children. And coming to a new area was very threatening, a lot of pressure. Once again, she didn't speak the language. She had come close to the parish priest and the sisters that worked there, and I was working there at the time, and tried to, I think, to draw comfort from the relationship she had with the parish ministers and so forth. But one day, she came to me talking about things that seemed very unusual. She was very fearful, very much afraid, and felt like she was being followed and that there were spirits that were kind of coming after her. And I could not quite make any sense of it. But in fact, what was happening is she was on the verge of a breakdown and came to us because there was no place else to come. And one day, I had arranged to take her to a mental health center that was in the neighborhood where they spoke Spanish, where they could help her, even culturally, with what she might be experiencing. But when I got to the house, the door was locked, the shades were drawn, and there was no sound inside the house. And in fact, she was hiding inside from the dangers that she was feeling coming upon her. And she had the children with her, so finally, after a lot of negotiating, even with the neighborhood police, we were able to get in and found her just totally afraid and just filled with fear. So the children had to be taken for a while until she got help. But in the meantime, I had four children on my hands, all, I guess, ranging from the age of 10 to about 3, and no place to go, and I didn't want to put them in a situation that was very uncomfortable for them. They were already experiencing a lot of fear and unknowing what was going to happen. So I approached several families in the neighborhood, and I went to the first house and said to, the gentleman's name was Antonio, and his wife was Esther. I said, Antonio and Esther, I have these four children. They need to stay someplace for at least a week to 10 days. I couldn't tell them the entire story because there was some confidentiality about it, but could you take a couple of the children and then I think I can put the other children in another place, another home? And he said, absolutely not. The children have to stay here because it's already terrible enough for them to be separated from their mother. And they had children of their own. I said, well, what can we do to help you? Because it's absolutely nothing. We will provide and we'll figure out. This home is big enough for them. It's big enough for people who need. And I've always been overwhelmed with the generosity of people when there is a need for hospitality and when we find ourselves in very vulnerable situations. And I think all of us can identify a moment like that. even as adults, as children. Age is not a factor. Age does not protect anybody from feeling vulnerable or needing hospitality. So I don't know if perhaps you might want to share a little bit about your own experience of being a stranger or in need of hospitality. If you do, please, you know, feel perfectly welcome to do so.
3 years ago, my husband and I went down to Florida to celebrate my retirement. And we hadn't been there long before he went into the hospital for emergency surgery. And he did not respond well. He heart and lungs started. And our rental on the condominium came to an end. And I wasn't quite sure where to go, but my husband said, oh, just go to a motel. So I went to a motel and was, oh, it was just deadly, spending all day in the hospital and then going to a motel. So then I had a thought. I asked at the hospital one of the volunteers, do any of the volunteers rent rooms? No, not that she knew, but then the word went around among some of the volunteers, and one of them came to me and said that she had an extra room in her house, and wouldn't I come and be her guest? So I stayed with her for a couple weeks, her and her little dog. And she was a good Christian, and it was so wonderful to come to her home at the end of that kind of a day and play with her dog and maybe read some scripture and feel sanctuary. Never forget.
This didn't happen to me, but, I mean, it wasn't me who needed the shelter, but I recall a time we had a Laotian family who just moved to our little community, and they spoke very, very limited English, and the mother was pregnant. And they lived in an apartment just up the road from us. And in the middle of the night, maybe 12, 1 o'clock at night, we got a knock on the door, and the father, he said, baby coming. And my husband and I thought, oh, my goodness, what does he mean? And so we went with him up to his apartment, and his wife was in labor, and they had a little girl. And we brought the little girl to our house, and our children took care of her. And my husband and I went up to the hospital with her. She spoke no English, and so I stayed with her the whole time, and well, the doctor got her organized. But I just thought, you know, here they were in this country with limited skills and stuff. And the little girl stayed in at our house while she was in the hospital and stuff. And we got to know them. And
we had the contemporary posadas, mm-hmm. Yeah. A mother with a child on the way, waiting for someone to accompany them.
Her youngest child was with us, was born 15 years ago, and he came almost 3 months premature. And we were 150 miles from the nearest hospital that could handle that kind of a risk. And so and the baby was transferred. My wife was left in our small county hospital because she was 2 weeks from giving birth. Baby was transferred up to a hospital in Fargo, North Dakota, and you know, I went with, kind of an odd situation, but I went with, and I remember sleeping, you know, about 3 a.m, and a pastor of a congregation just 2 blocks from the hospital happened to be there to see someone from his congregation that had a heart attack, and a nurse said, by the way, there's a fellow up on the fourth floor there, in the high-risk nursery there, and he invited me to come home for a couple hours. Initial crises had passed anyway, and I was able to go home. It was a 30 below zero evening, you know, so it's a wonderful thing. You get a tap on the shoulder, and what, you know, come, we have a place for you.
And what a welcome feeling.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was true. Because I just finished reading your article before I came, but it's so many things came to my mind, but Well, when I was 18, my mother died of cancer, and I was very distraught. I didn't want to be in the house where she had died. I just wanted to go. And I went to Europe. I traveled around Europe, hitchhiked around Europe, and I was very sad. I wanted to be happy and see all the beautiful artwork in the museums. Everything I dreamed of seeing, I was seeing it, but I still wasn't happy because I missed her so much. When I was hitchhiking out of Paris, it was horrible because it took me forever, and I was exhausted, I was tired, I was at my lowest point. And a guy picked me up, and which was a blessing, except he took me to a bar, and he got me drunk, and he was totally drunk, and he was driving down these country roads, and then he just stopped and said goodbye and pushed me out of the car, and I had no idea where I was at. And I was hung because I wanted to eat, but he just wanted to drink. So finally, I was just stumbling down the road, just, you know, praying that something would happen, because I didn't have no idea where I was, just in the French countryside. When I was feeling my very worst moment, a truck rolled by, like a van, kind of. And these people kind of just slowed down and just looked at me and just kept their eyes on me and kind of drove off, you know. And then before I knew it, another car, same thing happened. They stopped and they just looked at me. And then finally the car stopped and the guy said, "Hey, come here." And asked me to get in the car. And so I just ran over there and I got in the car, and then they started talking to me, and I didn't know what they were talking about. Because they were speaking French, I didn't understand French. And then he said the word to me, gitano. He said, asked me in Spanish if I was a gitano, I was a gypsy. And I said, gitano. And they realized these guys were gypsies. And I said, I couldn't say yes because I'm not really a gypsy, but my mother used to claim that she was part gypsy, and that her dream for me was to go live with gypsies. So all of a sudden here I was with these gypsies, and he says, "Are you a gypsy?" And I tried to tell him I was Mexican American. Well, that didn't make any sense. So I said, "Yeah, I'm a gypsy." And he reached over and he gave me a big old hug and kissed me on the cheek and took me to where all these, because Caravan of Gypsies finally ended up, and everybody was, you know, making fire, making food, and playing music, and to them, I was just one of them. I was like a long-lost relative. And I stayed with them for about a week, and I had to eat at everybody's home. I had to meet everybody in this gypsy encampment, and nobody offered me a place to sleep. I just slept in my sleeping bag, like under a little, like, lean-to type of thing. But that was part of the whole thing, you know? They fed me, they gave me love, they gave me music, they gave me dance, they gave me posada without even putting a roof over my head. I was part of the family. And then when I left, I was real sad because I had made so many friends, and when I left, they just said, "Okay, bye, see you later." No ceremony, no nothing. Because that's how they live, you know, just finding people, celebrating, and then saying goodbye. So that's my posada story.
That's quite an interesting posada story. I'm sure that ours could match that. But I think what it brings out is that to ask and to need shelter is really a fundamental human need. All of us need it. And it's not just the shelter of a home or a dwelling place. There are many kinds of shelters that we seek and we long for. And it's the question, I suppose, of people feeling dislocated, becoming vulnerable when they journey. They journey away from home, but dislocated can also mean when you're away from family, when you're away from friends, when you're away from your neighborhood that you've grown up in, that's so familiar to you, and for one reason or another, you move. You have to move. Companies downsize, and people have to take employment elsewhere, and what was home is no longer home. It has to journey to another place. When you leave your country, there are many people in the United States that have had to leave their country, that perhaps were desirous to stay where they were, but there were other reasons why they were forced to leave. sometimes we can be dislocated within relationships, a relationship that we would hope would have been a nourishing one, and it turns out to be one great conflict, one of great tension, one of perhaps even a rupturing in our life. The question also of the comforts that we get used to. Some comforts that we get used to, we no longer have them perhaps for one reason or another. You might come to Holden Village and you find yourself in a totally different kind of a setting. And another kind, I think, of dislocation is the perception we have of our own self. The identity that we've come to become familiar with and comfortable with. And sometimes in our life there are challenges that want to draw us into a better self. So there are many experiences of dislocation that we can have. And the need for hospitality is a constant human need. But at the same time, there is another experience that's very natural, very much part of our human existence or human reality, and that is to be fearful of the stranger, to be fearful of those who seek and want and need hospitality. Because I think a stranger represents danger for many of us. It's an unknown quantity, an unknown experience or reality that lurks behind the stranger, someone that we're not familiar with. And strangers can cause us physical harm. And so we become very suspicious in our society of welcoming a stranger. A stranger also can challenge us because what we have is very familiar, is very comfortable. And when we welcome or allow an unknown presence into our life, then we don't know how it's going to challenge us to be different, what it's going to require of us. And that's a very fearful reality. So we're afraid oftentimes to extend ourselves to a stranger, and we try and keep them at a distance. And in human existence, we've done many things with strangers. It's a very natural response to strangers. We avoid them because we don't want to find ourselves in a risky encounter, in an encounter that can be demanding, that can be dangerous. And we also have peculiar ways of trying to neutralize the stranger, to take away the power that they have by befriending them, but befriending them sometimes by giving gifts, by giving something that will kind of buy the stranger's friendliness toward us. And that has happened in cultures and in societies. And in some societies, some societies have tried to do, besides appeasing strangers with gifts, is to exclude them, to say, you really don't belong in this particular community. You don't quite fit in this particular community. Perhaps it would be better for you to go elsewhere. So we try and find ways of excluding, and we also find ways to destroy them. And I don't think it takes us, it doesn't take much thought to think about some of the legislation that's been on the books about what you do with people that come into this country, that seek ways of becoming part of our society. And we try and exclude them, we try and destroy them, we try and neutralize them so they can't be of harm to us or they can't be of challenge to us. And in our contemporary society, there are many strangers in our midst. We can think of homeless, we can think of the critically ill, those inflicted with AIDS, we can think of the immigrant, anyone that seems to be different, very different from us, the other, the person that represents the stranger to us. But unfortunately in our society, we do not only protect ourselves from strangers, but sometimes we protect ourselves from those that are even within our own household. We are not welcoming necessarily to relatives, to a spouse. We don't know what to do with our children oftentimes. And so those that should enjoy the hospitality of the house, of the home, are also excluded. So it's not just the unknown. Sometimes it's the known. And if we could find space to allow the stranger to come in to our homes and to our hearts, we might discover that strangers can really bring unexpected gifts of experiences that they have lived, that we have never been able to live, that we have not had access to, and they come and tell us these stories. They come and give us ways of understanding other experiences, other cultures, other ways of being that enrich who we are. And a stranger can become a guest in our household. We open our homes, we open our hearts to them, but at some later date, this stranger who was a guest can then become a host, can be the person that is extending their heart, their listening, their shelter to us as well. In scriptures, we find many accounts that point out to the importance of extending hospitality. There is one from the Old Testament that reads as follows. You shall love the alien as yourself, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So all of us have been aliens in one way or another. We have felt that experience. We're not strangers to that experience. And in the Old Testament, we also find that Abraham is blessed with the gift of a son, which he had lost hope for because his wife was older, could no longer bear children. And this gift is given to him because he extends hospitality to strangers who come to him. And they turn out to be angels, angels in disguise. And yesterday we heard the reference to the Good Samaritan who attends to a stranger who is beaten and robbed by thieves and left on the road to die. And there is yet another story in scripture, a story that I want to give attention to, and that is the story of Mary and Joseph looking for posadas. So Dorothy's going to do us the favor of reading it.
Reading from the second chapter of Luke's Gospel. In those days, a decree went out from Emperor Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was the first registration and was taken while Quirinius was governor of Syria. All went to their own towns to be registered. Joseph also went from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to the city of David called Bethlehem, because he was descended from the house and family of David. He went to be registered with Mary, to whom he was engaged and who was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for her to deliver her child. And she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in bands of cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the inn.
And that is the scripture account upon which the whole practice of Las Posadas in the Hispanic community is based on. Mary and Joseph looking for shelter, looking for a place to stay. Mary very close to giving birth to the child who is Jesus. And we have in front of us the statues of Mary and Joseph. I understand that these are used here in Holden Village during the Christmas season. And Jesus, we've put at the back for the moment because he's not supposed to be here quite yet. But let me just describe for you the celebration of Las Posadas and try and put it in the context of where I experienced it, which is in the neighborhood where I grew up, the Mission. The Mission was settled by Hispanics after World War II, around 1945 or so, when a good number of Mexican-Americans came to live there. But it also became the home and neighborhood for all the Latin American countries. In this little small piece of a neighborhood, you have about 22 Latin American countries represented. You have people from Nicaragua, you have people from El Salvador, you have people from Puerto Rico, from Cuba, from Mexico, from all the different countries. And people come for different reasons. Some come because they felt that they could provide their family, their children with a possibility of life, a future. Some came because of political reasons. There was violence in their country. They came seeking refuge. So it's a mix of a little piece of Latin America with all the vibrancy of Latin America, and also at the same time with all the human needs that can be experienced with people who either find themselves alienated from their own country of origin, alienated from their own family because of political unrest, alienated because they're unemployed, alienated because they're poor, alienated because they don't speak the language, alienated because they're in a situation which is totally unfamiliar for them. But every December, 9 days before Christmas, something happens in the neighborhood which focuses our attention on the mystery and the need for all of us to have las posadas, shelter. And at the same time, the reason why we can call out and ask for las posadas. And that is the story and the account that was just read. So in the neighborhood, you can experience it in a variety of ways. Children can gather, they're carrying candles, and they have children that represent the different figures, a Mary, a Joseph, and they walk through the neighborhood with their candles. And they knock at different doors along the neighborhood. Sometimes there's stores, sometimes it takes place within the church itself. And at each door, they play the different parts of Mary and Joseph looking for lodging, and also of those innkeepers that kept them out for so many nights in a row. And so Mary and Joseph will knock on the door and call out, "I need shelter, please can you give us some space in your inn?" And the voice comes back, "No, you can't, we don't have any shelter, and who are you anyway? You might be a robber, you might be a thief, someone that can cause us harm." So for 9 days in a row, the same activity takes place. And the children begin to get carried into the mystery of what it meant for Mary and Joseph on that night, looking for lodging. But it's not just Mary and Joseph, it's all the contemporary Mary and Josephs, all the needs of the community, of people in their own families that they know have sought for some kind of shelter, for some kind of lodging, of one kind or another, and have had it or have had it turned, they've been turned away. And the final reward is the final night. Finally, one of the innkeepers says, "Yes, you may come in." And with that, the children and the adults and the whole community who's present is invited in to the home or into the church space. And there's a great celebration. There's candy for the children. There's hot chocolate for the adults. There's cookies. There's all kinds of wonderful things to eat. And it's a way of saying to the children and a way of saying to the parents, remember that there is a need for hospitality. There are strangers, and we must do this as our Christian response. And there is a reward. And the ultimate reward is that you do not know when that person knocking at your door is God Himself. The same way as in the story of the scriptures, on that night, it was the presence of Jesus, the incarnate Word, knocking at the door in the guise of Joseph and Mary, looking for lodging, and many turning away. So in the human heart of the Latino community that lives in the mission, we know what it's been like to have our pleas for help or for some kind of shelter refused. And we can never refuse, because who knows, it may be God in disguise, and we need to open the door. What I'd like to do is ask Carmen to accompany me just with a little bit of the verses that go along with Las Posadas and that have in it all these little kernels of wisdom that help us along in understanding not only the need for hospitality, but the requirement to give hospitality. What we're going to do is have the music and perhaps just sing the first two verses in Spanish, and then we'll take turns in English alternating the verses back and forth. So you can see who's the one that seeks and who's the one that refuses.
So you want me to sing the second verse?
Yeah, just the first two verses in Spanish and then we'll do that. Just so you have a sense for the color of it. Just a second. Aquí no es posada.
Pero la misma melodía.
Yes.
Aquí no es mesón. Sigan adelante.
So one sings from the outside and the other one responds. So we'll alternate back and forth, but just reciting the verses so you have a sense in English. So the children come up to the door and they knock. In the name of heaven, I ask you for lodging, because to keep on going, my beloved wife is unable.
This is not an inn. Continue on your way. I can't open the door. You may be riffraff.
Don't be inhuman. Have charity for us, that the God of heaven may repay you for it.
You may go now and don't bother us, because if I get angry, I am going to hit you.
We are very tired coming from Nazareth. I am a carpenter, Joseph by name.
I don't care about your name. Let me sleep. I already told you that we're not going to open.
Asking you for lodging, kind homeowner, for only one night, is the Queen of Heaven.
If she's a queen, who is asking? How is it that at night she's walking alone?
My wife is Mary. She is the Queen of Heaven, and she is going to be mother of the divine word.
Are you Joseph? Is your wife Mary? Come in, pilgrims. I did not know who you were.
May God reward good persons, your charity, and may heaven fill you with happiness.
Happy is the home that houses today the pure Virgin, the beautiful Mary. Come in, holy pilgrims. Accept this corner, not of this poor house, but of my heart.
And that is the verses to Las Posadas. So I hope that somehow I've been able to create a picture for you of how it takes place within the community where I grew up, but in many communities across the United States, 9 days before Christmas. And this is a wonderful way of reminding all of us that partake in Las Posadas of the need for hospitality, how it is a Christian practice, but not only the need to give hospitality, but we will also, at one time or another in our lives, be in need of hospitality. But the whole practice of hospitality is not an easy or simple task. It requires hard work. And it requires courage. It requires the support of others, of community. And the experience in the offering and practicing and practice of hospitality will make us wise in how to become hospitable people. But it's only in the practice of doing it that we learn what it means to be a hospitable person or a hospitable community or a hospitable family. And we also only learn how to do it well by practicing hospitality. We don't always do it well, but we learn from our mistakes what's missing in our extension and in our practice of hospitality. In the face of overwhelming human need for shelter and care, and in the face of our own fear of strangers, We need to develop ways of supporting one another in the practice of hospitality. Hospitality is something that is done best when it's done by a community, by a family, by a group. Las Posadas for Hispanics is more than ritual. For us, it is a way of reminding us that the stranger at our door can be God. So let me end this little part with a reading that reminds us of the following. And this is the reading from Matthew that talks about the Last Judgment. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate people one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will put the sheep at his right hand and the goats at the left. Then the king will say to those at his right hand, "Come, you that are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you?" And the king will answer them, "Truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me." We began by recalling moments when we have experienced being strangers. So let me just ask you to pause for a moment. Let us all pause for a moment and think of times when we've also been able to not only enjoy hospitality, but perhaps give hospitality as well. And what has happened to us because of those wonderful moments. Invite you to either share those moments or perhaps have comments or questions that you might want to share with the group here.
When serving a congregation 150 miles from Fargo, we never locked the church building there. And it was a small rural community. And there were many times there were people on the road that came in, and nothing has ever been harmed, at least in the years that I was there, and prior to that. I recall one time there was a wrestling tournament in a small high school, and the sheriff was a member of our congregation, and it was not possible for buses that, you know, from these distant towns, to, usually to go 50 to 100 to 150 miles to go to different things because the towns are so far apart. And this one bus started out, and the sheriff stopped and directed home. And there were 50 kids on a bus. There was no motel, and there was a small motel, but I couldn't handle that group. So he just instinctively brought them to the church. Women had gotten quilts ready for a spring shipment. Mm-hmm. He took them out of the containers that they had there, and he knew that if they were going to get sore, they'd be, you know, he'd give it to him with both barrels. You know, he prepared the whole place and then called me after the fact to say, "By the way, you know."
Not
And he says, now they are hungry. You know, in a small town, you know your resources, and the manager of Food Mart, I mean, there's a blizzard raging. The manager of the one grocery store also was a member of the congregation, and I said, suppose we could order about 25 pizzas. And he opened up the store, you know, and brought things in, and I guess to shorten the story is that some of the thank you notes that came back from worried parents for putting up their kids for night, actually it turned out to be 2 days because of the blizzards that kind of come up there, was from one of the families, was from the pastor that brought me in about 10 years before when our child was born. So, you know, an opportunity to return, unbeknownst to me, amongst the kids who were part of that group was one of his children. So an opportunity to return.
So you were a guest at his home, and now you were
an opportunity to repay that, and without even thinking that his son was amongst, you know, that group of students.
That often happens when you give hospitality, you get it back.
Susan, when we were in Bellingham, Washington, I had just delivered my firstborn, and we received a call from the YMCA saying that there were two people. And I thought they had said that they were from south of the border and they needed a place. It was Christmas time. They needed a place to go because they couldn't get home. So I called my husband at the church and said, there are apparently some Hispanic people who are without a home and they need to come to our place. And so Martin called the YMCA. And then he called me back. He said, no, they're not from south of the border. They're from South Dakota, I think. The man at the YMCA said that they had accent. I think they're Norwegians from Bruce probably remembers this story. So imagine our surprise when Martin goes to the YMCA. Who is there but two very black Zimbabwe students who were south of the border. They had been turned back at the Canadian border, which at that time was not accepting the passports of people from Zimbabwe. And so here they were, you know, I'm expecting homeless Hispanics. Martin thought they were beautiful students from Zimbabwe who were traveling on their school break hoping to visit the brother of one who was in Canada, but they couldn't get into Canada. Mm-hmm. So we had them in our home for a week, and they came to our parish for Christmas Eve, and they had been pickpocketed on the bus. So they had lost their cash, and our congregation bought bus tickets for them to go home. But the blessing was to have these men in our home for all the days before Christmas and for Christmas itself. We ate oyster stew, and Martin took them to the seafood place where we picked out the oysters from the tank. And the one man said, stones? You're making soup of stones? The oysters were still in the shell. Yeah, we should eat this. But somehow it opened up this little provincial, sort of turned in on its parish that we were serving, to have these people, these Zimbabweans among us.
And we all live in our own little provincial worlds. And thank God for the challenge that hospitality requires of us and demands of us, so that we can open our worlds to be bigger and to be more Christian and to be more available and accessible and enriched by the experiences of others.
But what happened with these students to us is that in a way we practice hospitality three times. Mm-hmm. I prepared myself to receive some people from south of the border. I had this newborn, and so you go through that. I don't know these people. Should I bring them into my home? Yes. Then you prepare yourself to receive people from South Dakota. And I think, in a way, it was almost like welcoming
the guest three times, because three times you go through the question, will our door be open? And so what a joy to find, when you don't know ahead of time, that the answer that will come out of you is yes. It's amazing. Because you don't know for sure until it's there.
And I think the practice of hospitality also probably requires that we set within ourselves a responsiveness to it, a way of teaching our children, teaching our families how it needs to be practiced. And having the family, if you don't have a ritual Las Posadas, it doesn't have to be that, but what other rituals do you have that can help us learn those ways of being with one another?
35 years ago, we lived in a small town in Ohio, and there was a family that was well known for its domestic violence. And one night, I was a newlywed bride, and my husband disappeared one night along with the doctor and the marshal of the community. He kind of was the trio that got called out when his family was having a fight. And he came back with John, who was 16, for an overnight. John stayed with us for 6 months. And began a long chain of many, many people coming into our home. But one of the many gifts that John gave me that I hope I will never forget is that I think it was the second or third day he was with us, he asked me for a clock. And I gave him one. And months later he said, "Do you remember when I asked you for the clock?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, the reason I needed it," and I thought it was so to get up in the morning and go to school, "the reason I needed it was I set it and had it under my pillow so I would wake up every several hours and make sure I was okay." He said, "I couldn't believe that anybody would take me into their home without having some evil thought in mind." And so here I am sleeping downstairs, patting myself on the back for being so nice to take in this teenager. And meanwhile, he is awaking himself every 2 hours to make sure he's safe.
Mm-hmm. And we need to feel safe. We need also to extend that to others. And unfortunately, I think we also need to bring this to conclusion in the sense of our sharing, but I hope not in the sense of our trying to practice it for each other. So since that is the case, then the child can come and join us.
And while I'm doing that, I also... because he can only arrive when there's a place to have shelter. To have posada. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to end this with the Christ child taking his place with the family and with the family and the community of believers. And also to let you know that tomorrow evening I'm going to talk about the practice of home altars in the Hispanic community, which is a very popular way of making God present in the household. And to invite those of you who want to come tomorrow evening to bring something that has special significance for you, that perhaps is a reminder of you of God's presence in your life, and we'll construct a little home altar so that we can all also enjoy it. So thank you.
I think that's at 10:30. It's 10:30.
Oh, tomorrow. Not the evening.
Not the evening. It's 10:30.
And will it be as well?
No, I think it's the other room.
Yeah, I think so as well.
But we can squish them if we need to.
But I just wanted to let you know that that's the thing for tomorrow. So thank you very much.
Yeah.